Our main speaker tonight is Linda.
Hi, everybody. My name is Linda, and I'm an alcoholic. It's great to be here. My sobriety date is January 10th, 1998, and I have sponsees and a lovely sponsor, and AG is my home group, my new home group. And I just want to welcome all you who are new. Sorry, speaking to the mic. I want to welcome all you who are new and visiting or just wondering if you're an alcoholic, because when I first went to a meeting, I didn't know that I was welcome or that I was one of the most important people in the room. And you are. It really matters to us that you're here. So this one's for you. So anyway, I have to put it out for Allison and Sean, who did such an amazing job. I could never have done that when I had just a couple of years. I was a very introverted person, and I remember coming into this room, and people put a name tag on me, and I was terrified. I didn't know what was going to happen. They dragged me up to the front. I thought, you know, they were going to make me talk or something. They didn't, but I was super scared, and when the person stood up, like Sean was saying, that I couldn't believe that somebody could speak like that in front of a lot of people. I could never do that. I grew up in a small town and in a large family, and there was a lot of alcohol and a lot of violence. They go together. And many people in the rooms have a lot of other things that have happened to them aside from getting an alcohol addiction, which is, I've had them both. So I learned a lot of different tricks about how to stay out of other people's fists and, you know, not get into too much trouble. Drinking and being high, that really helped a lot, because then it didn't matter what happened to me because I didn't feel it anyway. I started doing that when I was 12. By the time I was 15, I was a blackout drinker. And what that meant was after school, I would find a place to meet some friends and we would start drinking. And then I don't know what happened, and I would end up on my front porch. That's what it was. And I have a lot of instances like that in my past. So, you know, I'm really excited, so I'm trying to calm down here. when I first came in, a sponsor told me, your words really matter. So if you constantly say you're nervous or worried, that's what you're going to be. So just replace it with excited, you know? And it actually works, especially when you're getting on a plane and you're not going to drink. So I drank, like, throughout high school, like normal alcoholics. And I had a lot of problems, you know. I had other problems where I was truant. I ran away from school a lot. I pretty much graduated at the bottom of my class. There was 200 students in my class. I was 198th, and there were two special ed students below me, but not that there's anything wrong with that. And seriously, it was not because I'm, you know, have a learning disability. I do not. I had a lot of alcohol. I was drinking a lot. Anyway, Peggy's like, yeah. So that was my habit, and that's how I knew how to get through school and through life, like, just coast. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. What I saw at home on Friday nights was, you know, May Rossetti and her husband would come over to my house, and they would bring a bucket of clams, and my mom would put on some spaghetti, and they'd pour beer into the spaghetti, and, you know, the house would get all steamy, and the poker chips would come out, and, you know, the games were playing. I remember they would be drinking, and May, her cigarette ash would grow really long, and we'd just make bets for when it would fall off. And it was just seemed like really the, you know, the cool thing to do is to grow up and drink with friends. And I aspired to do that. And I did do that, but they weren't friends that I was drinking with. I drank with anyone. And it was super, you know, like I didn't have the judgment that I have today. You know, after 18 years of sobriety, I can kind of look around and go, maybe stay away from those people. Back then, no. So I moved to California because the problem was in New York. And lo and behold, there I drank as well. And before I knew, I moved in with an aunt and uncle, and before I knew it, they asked me to leave. And I didn't have any money, and they wanted me to leave because I left my drunk friends in their driveway when they had to go to work the next day, and they couldn't get out. And so they had me move out. And I had nowhere to go, so I moved onto the river down by the hobo camps. Like in New York, in California, they have like hobo camps along the Sacramento River. And that was some scary stuff. I made a lot of friends that I like bought off basically with my food stamps so that they wouldn't hurt me. And I lived like that. Like, in the park, I slept on a park bench. Yes, this person did that. Because I had no clue that life was going to continue. See, I thought that, you know, I'm the kind of drunk that's like, let's drink it all tonight. You know, not like, let's save some for tomorrow. No, because I didn't think tomorrow was going to happen a lot of the time. Anyway, so it was suggested to me to go to school, and I had great grades, right? So I got to go to a public school and a college, and you know, I lived with other people like me who drank and used dry goods and you know, lived on the river and stuff like that, that's what made sense to me. So I never thought about, meanwhile, back in New York, I had a family. I'm the oldest of seven, my brothers and sisters, parents, are just living their lives, like wondering what happened to me. I would send back a weird card every now and then, a letter saying where I was, and they would, I don't know, they wrote me back, but I never really read the letters. There was no connection there in my family. And I had a lot of resentment, you know. I was really angry. I had two feelings, angry and high. That's it. That's all I knew. And so the alcohol for me, like, I didn't know that I was chasing it because my body needed it. I thought I was putting out the fire of my rage. And it worked for a super long time. You know, it really did. Needless to say, like, I went to school. I somehow got through school. For years and years, I stayed in school. Oh, yeah. I told Ava about this. I was in school for, like, 16 years. Because I figured out how to get grants. I figured out if I just kept getting W's, I could still be a member of that society. I could still get food stamps and, you know, it was wrong. Other people were growing up and I was still in school. So I finally, like, I had enough credits over time to go to grad school. And I was able to go to grad school. But the only reason I was is because I was able, and some alcoholics are able to do this, stop for periods of time. Now, the things that I really wanted to do was, they were in front of me, right? And so I would force myself, like, okay, you're going to be good for the next month and apply to these grad schools and not drink too much, you know, or just on the weekends, or stop. So I did that, and throughout my life, there were many periods of time that I was able to do that. So I really felt powerful over alcohol. It did not scare me, and that's wrong. One of the things that the hobos told me on the river, is that you have to learn to respect the river, okay? Because there are tremendous, I know this sounds crazy, but there's a lot of, like, rapids will pull you under, and normal people will just walk in there and then get swept away. And it happened to people I know, my uncle, who knows? So they taught us that you have to learn to respect that, right? Well, I never respected my disease as an alcoholic because I didn't accept it that I was an alcoholic. So I couldn't accept that it had this that every single day I was putting my life on the line, every day. And I didn't know. It's insane. I drove drunk. Once I got a car, once I got back to reality and started renting an apartment, I got a job, and I was able to, you know, get a car for $500, and I would drive that drunk and often not know how I got home or be sleeping in the driveway, which is eventually how my aunt and uncle eventually told me to move out. So after that, I got really into my goals, my career goals at school, and I stopped for a while. Almost through the entire time I was in grad school, I stopped. And again, I felt so powerful. But I was like in a crazy rage that I didn't even know I had. I just walked around. People thought I was very distant. That's what they would say. You're distant. And it's like, no, I'm holding back because I hate everyone. And that was the truth. So I ended up, like, I applied for a Fulbright. I didn't win it, whatever. And but I was pissed, and I thought I should have, even though of my grades, I had W's all over and failures. So I just got really mad and got in my van and drove to Mexico and decided, I'm leaving you people. Forget it. I'm living in Mexico now. And that's what I did for a while. You know, like, the power of alcohol that pulls you to pick up, like, alcoholics have tremendous discipline, and I was able to drive all the way to Mexico by myself. I have 7 days. I drove through a crazy storm. Anyway, I got down there and I moved in with a bunch of Buddhists and learned how to meditate. And that's when I started drinking again. Okay? Thank you. That's when I started drinking again. So my job in the temple, all right, the only reason why I'm saying this is because it was really excruciating. My job in the temple was to wake up in the morning, and we would put out little bowls of water as offerings, right? And you had to put them one rice kernel apart, and not spill a drop of water. And the reason being is that, you know, water is, it's abundant, and you can't feel stingy with it. You can just give it, and not worry about it. So that was my job, and I had to go down in there into the temple at 6 a.m. and do that. Now, I shake now, but when I was hungover, I could not hold a glass. I was sweaty and disgusting, and I would spill the stuff, and I knew I was making a lot of bad karma for the place, and, you know, they eventually asked me to leave. Actually, the monks left first because I bug-bombed the place when they weren't there, and they were like, this is wrong, you shouldn't be doing this. Anyway, I had really, what I'm trying to say here is that alcohol, like my alcoholism led me to places that were way wrong. I made really bad decisions, you know, like the monks are off, there's a lot of cockroaches, let's get rid of them. And they knew right away when they came in that there was death in the temple, you know. So they asked me to go. Anyway, I eventually started to really have problems when I was in Mexico. You know, I was hanging out. I decided to move in with some crackhead Canadians. They were selling drugs. I was just drinking. I didn't care what they did. But my decision was like, oh, they're not going to mind if I, you know, just sit over here and just drink like some animal. Like, I didn't get changed. They had aluminum foil on the windows. They only had a pool table for furniture and like the front cab seats for trucks. That was their whole furniture in the whole apartment. And I was very comfortable there. And then I just, like, something happened. There was an earthquake, okay? And suddenly, for no reason at all, and I think this was my higher power, I realized I was in a country that had very little infrastructure. And there was going to be, like, buildings falling, and I needed to get out of there. And so I just came back to New York, because what else to do? You know, I can't go back to California. Those people, screw them. That's not a curse. And I just decided, oh, I'll go back to New York. Now, I, for years, 7 years, did not speak to my family. And so then I write them a letter and say, I need to come back. Do you mind? I need to come back. And my mom, you know, prodigal daughter, please come back, join us. And they let me move in with them. Now, I was really sick by this point. I was drinking every day. I was very greasy. I had very greasy hair, like, because I didn't think I needed to bathe that much. I didn't bring winter clothes from Mexico, so I wore my dad's clothes. And I just looked mentally ill. And I was. As an alcoholic, you tell yourself these stories, right? So I walked around thinking, like, I'm this, you know, very important artist who is, you know, whatever, living with their parents. It was so dumb. It really wasn't exciting. It was very embarrassing. And I eventually moved in with a cousin in New York City who said, you know, you need to meet some people, and I know where to go for you. So she brought me to an AA meeting. And I thought I was helping her get here, right? I was like, oh, poor thing, you know, what a drag. And at that time, like, people would ask me, oh, are you sober? And I was like, well, I didn't drink for almost 6 years. But I didn't know what they were talking about sober. And while I was in the meetings, one time, like after about a week or so, I met this woman in the back of the room, because that's where I would go, because half my foot was out the door, right? So I met this woman in the back of the room, and she was drawing, and I was like, I'm going to sit next to her because she looked mean, and everyone stayed away from her. And I decided that I would just get her phone number. And she started to be like my sponsor. Little did she know she was my sponsor. She got me to meetings, and I still didn't think I was the alcoholic. I still thought it was my cousin, but I was interested in the stories you guys told because I started to hear things that made sense to me, you know? And then suddenly there was this woman, her name was Isadora, who showed up at a meeting one time, and she came from a completely different background, grew up in the South, had a whole different story, right? But she had the same feelings that I had. Lonely and angry. Lonely and angry. Lonely and angry. And as she was talking, I was like, that's it. I have that. I have those feelings. The feelings of, like, as you've heard, like, feeling unique, feeling like a different, like, I was weird or whatever. All of us are weird. We all felt that way. We all feel that way. But Isadora started talking like this, and I grabbed this woman after the meeting, and I was like, I get what she's talking about. And the woman said, oh, you identify. And I thought, well, what is that? I mean, the whole lingo thing was all, it takes a couple years to learn that, so don't worry. But the identify thing is really important because she drank the way I drank, okay? She drank, she was able to stop a number of times, and then she couldn't stop. And that's what happened to me. I couldn't stop. I was in New York, I was living with a cousin who was sober, and I was drinking and I couldn't stop. And I was so mad that I couldn't stop. I tried anyway. I tried to, you know, I tried to make that alcohol work, and the last time I got really drunk was January 1st, 1998. And I basically got into a fight with the bartender because I knew he was watering the drinks down. They were not getting me drunk. I could drive. I was convinced I could drive. And it just didn't work. And I just knew, like, oh, this is terrible. I'm going to have to go back to those AA meetings and put my hand up to say, yes, I'm an alcoholic. And that's what I did. I came back from California, and I put my hand up and said, I'm an alcoholic. Finally, it was 9 months I'd been going to meetings and not owning it, right? Like, I couldn't. It was better for me to be just honest and wait until it really hit me that I'm an alcoholic. So it was. And as soon as that happened, I became like terrified because, oh my God, I'm an alcoholic, now what? Because I need to be drinking. And so I had to ask for help, and this woman volunteered to be my sponsor, and she was phenomenal because I drank so much that I couldn't pay attention, I couldn't read. It wasn't that I can't read, but the words were blurry, and my focus was probably about 2 minutes at a time. I could not finish a paragraph, and she read that book with me. I was so moved by that, because here was this person who I barely knew was sitting there. I kept expecting her to get up and go, and she's like, no, 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 we're going to keep reading. And we read the book together. I will always be so grateful to her for that, because it brought me back to the world. You know, I was able over time to like read it myself. And she started to say things like, you know, you need to go through the steps, let's go through the steps. So I talked to her about my drinking. I totally got it that I am powerless over alcohol. I don't know why I didn't drink when I went to AA and put up my hand. I don't know why. It's still a magic mystery to me. What happened after that, thank you, was that I realized, like, she pointed, help me see that my life was really unmanageable through the decision that I made. All the decisions, all those wacky decisions. Some of them I thought, oh, I'm just being, you know, I'm just having, you know, making pranks and stuff. But it was really like petty crime and, you know, breaking and entering and stuff that wasn't, like, I didn't have a real clear view of what I was doing in the world. So once I realized that I was seriously an alcoholic, I got terrified, as I said, and because what are we going to do? Oh, my God, how are we going to leave this room tonight? And she said, don't worry, you know, there's a solution. We have this solution, and it's in this book, and it's called The Big Book, and here it is. And it's the book that we had been reading. Like, I really didn't connect things for a long time. So it was a book we had been reading. And so she said, look, this is the part where it says, it gives you hope. There's hope here. Because all of us have been a beginner before. We know how you're feeling, how scared you are, how terrified, you're giving something up that maybe you can't do, you know? I mean, there's all bets are off, really. We're just trying this. And just to know that we all have seen that, we have a lot of love for you. And so I started feeling like people were learning my name, even without the name tag. People were learning my name. I wasn't invisible. I thought I had been. I thought I was invisible. And I couldn't believe that I was starting to care. You know, one of the first things that I did was I started to learn how to pray. Now, I thought I was a big Buddhist and, you know, but you know, one time when I was down there, we had the Dalai Lama came down there, and we were gonna take vows, and like no killing and no stealing and no drinking. And I was like, oh my God, what am I gonna do? So I leaned over to my friend and I was like, what do I do? What do I do? How do I can't lie to the Dalai Lama. She's like, don't worry, just don't take it in your mind. It'll be fine. And that worked for me for a long time. I didn't take it in my mind. I promised here, but not here. And anyway, so praying, needless to say, I did not have a real connection to a higher power in any kind of way. So I just started with the Serenity Prayer. Thank God, you know, so many times in early sobriety, I was going to drink. Oh my God, what am I doing sitting at the bar? At one point, I was sitting at a bar, and I was a year, no, no, it was Halloween, and I remembered, oh, I need to call my sponsor. Thank you. I need to call my sponsor. So I asked the bartender, bring over that phone. So from the bar, I was just about to call her, and I thought, you know, it's probably not cool to call your AA sponsor from the bar. I'm going to go outside and call her. And it saved my life. It saved my life. She saved my life because she answered the phone. And if the only thing I can stress tonight is that, like, miracles happen every single moment in AA. You know, every moment. And we're really just like you. We're just average people. But somehow this God thing happens, and we're able to love each other. You know, just this is amazing. So thank you for listening.